Thanks for joining us for another edition of the ACAP Coffee Break, a podcast from the Association for Community Affiliated Plans. In this episode, ACAP CEO Meg Murray speaks with James Stringham, CEO of Banner Health Plans. Without further ado, here's Meg.
Welcome to the ACAP podcast. Today I have with me Jim Stringham from Banner Health Plan. And welcome, Jim. We're glad you're here. Our loyal listeners know we love to hear the story of how somebody got to the C-suite. And Jim, you must have an interesting story because I see that your undergraduate degree was in criminal justice and psychology, which is probably part of it. But I'm really curious about the criminal justice part.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for having me, Meg. It's a pleasure to be part of this. And yeah, a pretty interesting journey. I wasn't lined up to go into healthcare really when I started my career and went off to college. I was majoring in criminal justice, thought I would probably get more into law enforcement and maybe even kind of migrate into more of a legal type of a career. But during my undergraduate, I was taking some psychology classes, got some interest in that. One of my professors provided an opportunity for me to go volunteer at one of the local Title I schools in the Flagstaff area where I went to undergraduate, and was working with some at-risk youth, a lot of individuals from tribal nations and American Indian, Native American population went to the school. And as I was working with the youth and connecting with individuals and hearing their stories, that kind of drew me more towards the field and kind of getting into more of the helping professions. So I actually switched my major and majored in psychology, minored in criminal justice, and then started my early career working with at-risk youth that were kind of kicked out of traditional public schools and trying to work with them, connect with them, and get them back on the right path. So that's kind of how I started and evolved within the healthcare space.
So what brought you to health plans?
It's quite a journey. And, it's kind of an amazing journey, honestly. You know, my first real job after working in that kind of at-risk school was more in case management in community mental health centers. And working with individuals with a serious mental illness, got very involved in working with those that unfortunately were often tangled up in the criminal justice system due to crimes of life and trying to survive on the streets, often as a result of their mental illness and not fully being connected into the system. So that was kind of my first foray into kind of healthcare. Obviously, we had contracts with managed care organizations that, you know, we were a part of that network. And as I was getting more and more involved, had fortunate opportunities to get advancements and move into different leadership roles, had an opportunity to work more directly with the criminal justice system around the impact of behavioral health on criminal justice, and then vice versa. How do you reintegrate individuals coming out of jails and prisons back into the community? And that fortunately got me a lot of opportunities to connect with people. And through those connections, as often happens within our field, we develop relationships, and those relationships led to a number of different positions, from doing training and development to overseeing network to moving into operations, some business development, work in merger and acquisitions. And ultimately, I've spent about 14 years at a large national not-for-profit healthcare company, doing a lot of business development and working in Medicaid and Medicare across 14 different states. And then kind of full circle back to safety net, not-for-profit community health, with this great opportunity that I'm fortunate to have with Banner Health Plans. And so a little bit of full circle. And I'd say one of the things that I tell a lot of folks, and I do some mentorship and speaking at different colleges, is over that course of, the last 20 of that 27 year journey, I had a number of different jobs, either within the same company or if I moved. And, I was fortunate I didn't have to really apply for any of them. It was through relationships, it was through networking, it was through opportunities that led me, honestly, to where I am today, from a case manager at a community mental health center to CEO of one of the larger health plans in Arizona and part of the largest health system here in Arizona.
Well, I know that the plan does a lot of work currently with justice-involved people. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and the role the plan has in making sure people have coverage when they get out of jail?
We do. Yeah, absolutely. And fortunately for us here in Arizona, our Medicaid agency Access has been one of the leaders in this space. And through jail reach-in programs, we have physicians as part of our health plan, as do our other health plan partners in Arizona, focused on criminal justice, focused on going into prisons and helping with transitions coming out of prisons. We've worked with a lot of our providers to develop capacity on that, to kind of reach in even further. Most reach in programs are only a couple of weeks and it's often late to try to connect, but being able to reach in earlier, we've leveraged some of our community reinvestment dollars specifically to target some of these populations. For example, down in Yuma, we've done some pretty innovative reach-in programs with the public defender's office, with the prosecutor's office, as well as some of our community providers to be able to connect members even sooner in order to make that transition more seamless coming out of prison. You know, because often folks don't know how to navigate the health system. If you're not navigating the health system, you also have all of these other social factors going on, and it could put you down kind of a really tough path. Honestly, I was just at an event last night and was talking with a young lady who works for one of our providers who came from a prison population, and she's a peer within that. And she was just telling me story after story of folks who come out of prison, don't know how to access this great benefit of Medicaid coming out, and then down the road end up having really tough healthcare outcomes. And so that's an area that we've really focused a lot on, Meg, as you know.
Well, another area I heard you talk about, and maybe you can talk to our listeners about, is the work you're doing on housing. When you talk about social factors, obviously housing is a big issue too. And the state has a 1115 waiver that I believe gives you really unique powers to be able to address housing. So what is Banner doing on that front?
Sure. Great question. And so much happening in the housing space, and all of that happening, it's not enough. And the need is greater than ever. Like many other markets, Arizona, the cost of housing continues to skyrocket, and it's really challenging for our members to get affordable housing. So, I mean, we're doing things, I would say, almost in three buckets. From a health plan standpoint, it is definitely an area of focus. We've funded a number of different initiatives for community development corporations to do different types of innovative housing and permanent supportive housing, including programs where we've leveraged motels as transitional living in order to get folks stabilized and then into you know, other types of longer range housing. So we do quite a bit on that just on a plan perspective. As part of the Arizona Health Plan Association, back in 2019, we formed kind of a coalition called Home Matters to Arizona, and we created a fund. And all of the different health plans committed to give a portion of their community reinvestment into an overarching fund that we would then use to actually invest in different housing projects with community development corporations, other investors targeted on low income, and really looking at not just building houses, but building communities and building homes. And so part of the Home Matters values that we focus on when we're going to provide funding to a project is there accessibility, transportation? Are there healthy food options within an area? You know, can you access schools for children? And that's where we lean our money into to try to, you know, not just build a house, but build a community around the house, which we think ultimately will impact longer term health outcomes in a positive way. So we're doing that kind of as a community, and we've, you know, raised tens of millions of dollars and provided funding to many different projects. Often we provide some of the gap funding to get projects over the hurdle where they might have larger banks financing with kind of a financing model, but they need like another $500,000 or $1 million to, you know, do a particular component of it. That's where we come in. And then of course, Arizona overall, you know, to your point, we had the 1115 waiver, the housing, it's the H2O program. Right now that's in process of getting kind of finalized and operationalized, but ultimately that will impact the ability for other individuals who meet the right qualifications to get access through housing from Medicaid. So excited about that. Again, that pod is significant, but nowhere near enough, but it'll really help start to show outcomes that we can then maybe expand it in the future.
Fascinating. Well, when you were talking about your journey, you talked about how you serve as a mentor to people, and I know you've done that for ACAP CEOs as they begin their journey to become a CEO. But I'm curious, how about some of your mentors? Who inspired you, and what in particular, what did you take away from them?
Yeah, it's a great question, and probably could spend the whole podcast talking about the folks that influenced me from strong leaders like Ann McCabe, who was our president at an organization who gave me some really great opportunities and development to, you know, even my current situation at Banner and our leadership team, both at the corporate level. I would always have to kind of start at the beginning and thinking about my grandfather, who really kind of helped instill some fundamental values in me growing up. I come from a family that split early when I was like three and spent some time living with my grandparents and always had great relationships with my real dad and my mom and my stepdad. But my grandfather kind of had that time of formation, a real big impact, and saw him. He worked at the railroad, working super hard, really had the ability to balance and kind of leave work at work and really focus on, you know, family and grandchildren when he got home. And that's something that I kind of carried even in corporate life, where I was flying all over the country. I was always trying to figure out how to get back on a red eye so I don't miss a baseball game, or, you know, working from home when working from home wasn't, you know, the status quo, as you see me sitting in my house now. But it was kind of some of those values that you don't have to compromise family. You don't have to compromise your values to be successful. If you do hard work and you lead by example, sometimes that actually can help even more. And, you know, kind of not having an ego and things like that. Those are things that he kind of instilled in me early on. So I could talk about a dozen more, but that's probably where it all started.
Well, I know when I've heard you talk about your sons and your relationship with them, that's clearly paid off. And it sounds like your sons are doing really well because of that. So
yeah,
that's a great testament to you and your grandfather.
Thank you.
So I know some of the things that you're proud of, you talked about the housing and the justice involved work that you're doing. But what are some of the other things that you've undertaken at the plan that you're most proud of?
Yeah. And so, you know, I just had, I guess, my 4-year anniversary at the plan, and time flies, particularly in COVID years, because it feels like a flash, you know, of light from when I started back in 2019. I would say I was fortunate to come into a plan that had a really passionate team, a really strong focus on our member. We call that member persona Sophia. And, you know, we lead all of our meetings with talking about Sophia and how we impact, you know, Sophia every day. And Sophia is kind of a persona, but it really represents all of our different members. And so it's a way for us to talk about positive stories as well as where we might have missed the ball and how we need to improve. So it was a great foundation from there. You know, I spent a lot of time kind of helping build out infrastructure of the team, advancing some of our technology, particularly around analytics, in order to really impact care where it matters most, which is in the community. So how do we work on those community relationships? So kind of that focus on people, process, technology is kind of been foundational for the last several years. But I'd say kind of most proud of, I think of like our constituent groups and our stakeholders, right? And, you know, it starts with our members, and we've got over 300 and some thousand members that we're just honored to serve. And then it's our employees who then, you know, make the magic happen. And then, of course, the providers who are closest to the community. And I've been really proud to see, like, over all three of those domains, from our member satisfaction survey results have continued to increase. Our net promoter score with members is over 78, which is, you know, kind of unheard of. If you're familiar with the net promoter score, that's above like Costco and, you know, major brands, USAA. And our member choice has continued to improve. So members are liking what we're providing for them, which is great. Our employee satisfaction, we do surveys quarterly and then an annual survey. Our marks are at the top of Banner, and then we also compare that with other industries. And so it's great to see those benchmarks, and we do really well in employee engagement, developing our team, confidence that our teams have on our leadership, those types of domains. And then kind of lastly, but equally important, is our providers, our provider satisfaction scores, provider engagement and interaction scores. I was at a community meeting last night. As I mentioned, we had 60 partners in there and did not hear one kind of, you know, usually there's a claims issue or there's this and that. We've really focused on that. And I'm not saying we're perfect. We still have, you know, areas to continue to improve, but those scores on those three domains, you know, I think continued to improve. And those are probably the things I'm most proud of.
Well, in terms of the data analytics, I'm sure that the plan is thinking a lot about the use of artificial intelligence. And could you talk a little bit about that? Where is the plan using it? And what are some of your thoughts in terms of how to make sure that it's being used in the most ethical and efficient way possible?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's such a, you know, important topic because there's opportunities, particularly as we think about workforce challenges, and things like that, to automate, to maybe supplement. I think most importantly, we have to remember healthcare are humans. And so there are elements that we've really got to focus on to make sure those human connections stay intact. And that's critically important. It's important from a provider standpoint. It's important from a health plan standpoint. And you can have augmentations, you can have, you know, opportunities to enhance or create, you know, more access and interface, but there always has to be an ability to reconnect with the human when appropriate. So I think that's important to look at kind of the balance of those things. It's not a replacement of, it's an enhancement or augmentation. You know, we have looked at it more around kind of those transactional activities, more back office, honestly, kind of leveraging bot technology to, you know, take things from one area and plug it into another in order to, you know, get a report out or to streamline some of those activities. We haven't delved into it fully from like a full AI and thinking about how it can completely redefine healthcare. We're kind of, you know, sitting a little bit cautionary to see how some of that unfolds, you know, looking at the literature and what's out there. But, you know, it's been more kind of on that, you know, and I say bot technology, but of trying to simplify some of those transactionals. If our grievance and appeal person has to go to four different things, just to pull information, to put it into a different form, how can we streamline that? Or, you know, call center staff, that type of thing.
So I'm sure that this issue of how to use it is one of the challenges coming up. What are some of the other top challenges you see for the plan in the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think maybe right along with that is workforce. You know, workforce is a challenge. It's a challenge in Arizona. It's a challenge for our providers. It's a challenge for the health plans. It's a challenge for health systems. I think, you know, the rising cost of employment is difficult. If we think about the cost of living and the housing component that we just discussed, for our members within that domain and that framework, many of our employees, both within plans or even in the community, are equally having challenges with affordable housing and things like that. And so all of those elements kind of tie in together from like, how do we have a healthy community? And so that is an area that we continue to focus on. You know, we have a great relationship with the University of Arizona. Maybe you see my hat in the background, but, you know, we Banner University Health Plan is part of our affiliation with the university, and they do quite a bit around workforce studies, particularly in rural communities. And so we've been able to provide funding to them to help, you know, continue to analyze and develop strategies around that, particularly around caregiver support. So there's a lot happening in the space. The state's looking at more flexibilities around family caregivers and having that be a payable service. And so we're, you know, kind of right in the middle of all of that from a workforce standpoint. I'd say, you know, technology is another element. There is a lot of advancements in technology. There's a lot of hope, a lot of hype, and a lot of promises in it. And there's definitely something there, but, you know, as for safety net plans, not-for-profit plans, it's sometimes, you know, more challenging to kind of keep up. And when do you make those investments that are going to have the greatest impact? And sometimes it's multiple years before you start seeing that impact. And it's important to do that. But you've got to do it, you know, thoughtfully, because we can't afford to miss on those types of investments. So like I said, we invested in a new analytic platform a couple of years ago. We're just now really fully seeing the maximization of that. And we're connecting now with other aggregators, ACOs, clinically integrated networks. We're able to push out gaps in care and provide kind of that real-time point of care type decision support. and looking to see the benefits of that. But it's an investment and it's a journey.
We didn't talk about one of the biggest challenges over the past year and a half, and that is the unwinding. And I'm curious, how has unwinding impacted your numbers, and are people coming back on? What's the status of that?
The unwinding is one of the major initiatives in 2023, particularly in Arizona. I don't think we were the first state, but if we weren't, we were very early. We kind of launched the unwinding process in April of 2023. The good news is we had a great partner in Access, and we started a lot of work on that, you know, probably all the way to the October before that, really worked on kind of enhancing the tools and data that plans were getting so we could share that out in the community with providers. You know, we brought in a new vendor who was an ACAP partner to help assist us with that process. And they did, you know, and don't quote me on the exact number, but like 350,000 or more touch points between SMS text to social media to calls to emails. So we really pushed that out quite a bit. But we know with the Medicaid population, all that effort, there were still a large percentage that didn't have any understanding of what redetermination was or unwinding, didn't understand the impact of that. And so, you know, that's when we really started pushing it out with providers and in the community. So a lot of efforts in that space. And we got great reporting from the state on dashboards. We could then do follow-up. If someone did incorrectly get exited out, we could help get them back in. We, you know, had a nice process to warm handoff to exchanges, and we have a through Banner Aetna, we have an exchange plan, so we're able to, you know, look at ways to, you know, make sure folks land, whether it be Banner Aetna or any other qualified exchange plan. So a lot of efforts there. You know, we are over 98 last month. You know, the state said we're about 99% through kind of everyone that would need to be redetermined. So, you know, now we're getting into March. We'll just start the normal process, which is just the regular annual process. We're going to keep some of those best practices and tools in order to continue that work on that. So we're kind of gone through that. If you look at it from kind of an aggregate, you know, level, I think the state was anticipating around 20% reduction. I think it ended up at around 18%. So we, you know, we lost a few less than what we were thinking, which is a good thing. And most importantly, we want to make sure people are on the coverage that they qualify for. And so it was about 18%. We performed a little bit better than that, if you want to use better, as far as less people exiting the plan. We were more around 13 or so percent. And we think a lot of those outreach efforts, the engagement efforts, and those types of things played a factor in that.
Well, with all that on your plate, we always like to conclude by saying, how do you relax? And in particular, for a lot of our readers or a lot of our listeners are also readers, is there a particular book you're reading right now? Or what are your thoughts about how CEOs can relax and recharge?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'll start with the book first, because I don't know if it's relaxing, because I'm kind of reading it more for work related. But one of our my board members, I have a board, we have a community based board. So one of our board members, who runs one of the larger behavioral health agencies in the state, recommended a book to me. It's called Leadership on the Line. So I'm just a few chapters into it, but pretty fascinated by it. It's really talks about kind of the dangers of leadership, particularly when you're trying to lead through change, and, you know, thinking more of adaptive leadership as a way, and what adaptive leadership is that it's not just a one-time change. It's a continued evolutionary process that we need to prepare our teams for. And part of that is, how do you engage the teams and that culture and their values as part of that, to see then how do you build upon those strengths, and where are those things that you might need to modify? So it's really about more bringing people in to be part of that change, than kind of making the change in a more kind of authoritarian way. So it's pretty interesting. Again, I'm just kind of early into it, but it's on my desk, so I figured I would mention that one. As far as relaxing, you know, as I said, I've really tried to balance the best we can. I've kind of taken more of the approach of work-life integration, where I love to travel. I love to go see my kids who are in college, and my wife and I like to go visit and travel. And so it isn't always as easy to do, like my grandpa said, where just shut it off. So what I try to do is kind of integrate it in. And so I can go to Boise to see my son at Boise State, and I might have to do emails and do some work in the mornings, and then we can go skiing, and then kind of check back. And you're not always fully off, but you're engaged and connected. And so, I like to travel, play golf, and do those types of things to kind of balance things out. But I think it starts with loving what you do. And I love my team. I love our plan. I love the work we do with our providers and then the community. So it's kind of the, cliche of if you love what you do, it doesn't really feel like work. And there's some true elements in that, even in the most stressful of days, which we all experience.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing your experiences and your thoughts with the podcast.
Thanks, Meg. Appreciate you having me.
And that concludes today's ACAP Coffee Break. Remember, you can find and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And check out the link in this episode's description for ACAP's Goodreads bookshelf. We'll see you next time.